If I asked you how many subscriptions you have, would you be able to list all of them and how much you're paying? If you would have asked me this question before I started using Rocket Money, I would have said yes. But let me tell you, I would have been so wrong. I can't believe how many I had and all the money I was wasting. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/wondery. rocketmoney.com/wondery.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
President Biden and Vice President Kamala Harris are set to headline the House Democrats' virtual retreat next week. And if there's one thing Democrats do better than anyone, it's retreat.
From 30 Rockefeller Plaza in New York City, please enjoy this podcast edition of Late Night with Seth Meyers. On today's show, Seth chats with comedian and actor David Spade. But first, a closer look.
Former President Donald Trump will give his first speech since leaving office this weekend at the Conservative Political Action Conference, and Republicans are still rallying around him as the future and the leader of the GOP. For more on this, it's time for a closer look. After 5 years of doing everything possible to hide them, it was reported today that Donald Trump was finally forced to turn over his tax records to the Manhattan District Attorney this week after the Supreme Court denied his last-ditch attempt to keep them concealed. And look, I'm no prosecutor, but it can't be that hard to find a crime in the tax records of a guy who claims to be a billionaire yet paid only $750 in federal income taxes when he was president. This wasn't way back in the 80s when he was just a New York real estate developer and, I'm guessing, aspiring birthday magician. Mom, that guy made my presents disappear! This was 2017 when he was the most powerful and most famous person in the world. It was so brazen, I'm shocked he didn't live stream it. Sup, fam? Welcome to my Twitch stream. Today we'll be committing tax fraud, and make sure to subscribe because next week we'll be playing the new online Ocean Master. And yes, there are plenty of technically legal ways that the wealthy and corporations avoid taxes, which is a scandal in itself. But something tells me Trump doesn't just limit himself to the legal stuff. I'm guessing he commits crimes the way the rest of us order apps for the tables. Should we just get one of everything? So a criminal investigation in Manhattan is intensifying, not to mention an investigation in Georgia of his attempt to steal the election there. Plus, there are, like, I don't know, 30 other investigations last I checked. Oh, and also there was that whole insurrection thing. And yet he's still scheduled to give his first post-presidency speech to the Conservative Political Action Conference on Sunday, a move that has most Republicans thrilled, but also caused a few awkward moments in the party, as evidenced by the public split yesterday between House GOP leader Kevin McCarthy and Congresswoman Liz Cheney, who voted to impeach Trump.
You and the leadership, especially Congresswoman Cheney, do you believe President Trump should be speaking, or former President Trump should be speaking at CPAC this weekend?
Yes, he should.
Congresswoman Cheney?
That's up to CPAC. I've been clear my views about President Trump and the extent to which following January 6th, I don't believe that he should be playing a role in the future of the party or the country.
On that high note,
very funny. The GOP responds to divisions over the future of their party like an uncle who farts at Thanksgiving dinner. Oh, and with that, I will retire to the family room. It was rare to see that kind of disunity on public display because during his presidency, Trump commanded near-universal loyalty within the Republican Party despite his abysmal record of failure on both policy and politics. Remember, he never cracked 50% approval once. He was impeached twice. He lost the popular vote twice. He lost the House by the highest margin since Watergate and lost the Senate in January when Democrats won two Senate seats in what was once a reliably red state, Georgia. Sticking with Trump is like putting Ringo in charge of the Beatles.
Okay, what about more songs where I sing? Also, a no autograph policy. Peace and love.
Why on earth would you want to stick with a guy who was basically single-handedly responsible for your political annihilation? It reminds me of my weekly bowling team. We would all hit at least 200 every week, except for Dale, who would always chuck the ball across two lanes because he had gravy all over his hands from the disco fries. And every week, I'd tell my teammates, let's cut Dale loose. And they'd say, we can't, because he bankrolls the team with the $1 million settlement he won from the local Dairy Queen when he spilled a blizzard in his lap and his dong got frostbite. Anyway, the point is, Republicans stuck by Trump no matter how bad he was for the party because they agreed with him. They were engaged in the same project and wanted the same things. With a few exceptions, they were all Trump. I mean, Lindsey Graham literally wore the same clothes when they went golfing, like a chihuahua whose owner makes him wear matching outfits. This looks like one of those pictures of Manute Bol and Muggsy Bogues when they both played for the Bullets. It was called the Bullets before they changed it to the Wizards. Took an armed insurrection stoked by the president and fueled by insane lies about election fraud to finally put some distance between a few Republicans and Trump. Even Graham, as you might recall, briefly suggested that he might finally be ready to separate himself from Trump.
Trump and I, we've had a hell of a journey. I hate it being this way. Oh, my God, I hate it. From my point of view, he's been a consequential president. But today, first thing you'll see, all I can say is count me out, enough is enough.
I believe he was reciting a monologue from the Tennessee Williams play, A Streetcar Named Delire. You can stay for the rest of the closer look, but it's all downhill from there. What's that? You want me to do a scene from Streetcar Named Delire? I couldn't. Okay, we've had a long journey, Trump and I, from the salt marshes of Charlton to the riverboat of Mississippi to the Sparkleberry Swamp. Meemaw says he's just a figment of my imagination, but to me, he was real. It's real as a glass of peach tea and a warm Chattanooga night. God, I hate a day on this way, but sometimes life comes up and bites you like an Appalachian salamander on a meth bender. End a scene. Well, it won't surprise you to learn that Graham almost immediately did a 180. He probably thought that by calling out Trump's bad behavior one time, he'd get to co-host a podcast with Obama and Springsteen. Fellas, I'm looking at my Spotify, and I cannot believe I am finding out like this. Well, count me out. You can't be out when you were never in. Yeah, Linz. Oof. I tried to get two rock and rollers, and I nailed the Ringo. That's it. You always said, don't only one rock and roller a show. Ah, Linz. That was a little better. You're out, Linz. Graham's been all over cable news proclaiming Trump the face of the Republican Party even after the insurrection and the mass death and misery his presidency produced. Over the weekend, Graham flew to Trump's Mar-a-Lago resort to spend time golfing and dining with Trump. He has spoken to the former president nearly daily since January 6th, more frequently than any of his Republican colleagues in the Senate. They talk almost daily? I don't even speak to my own family on a daily basis. I tried to Zoom with my dad last week, but he wouldn't stop complaining about how much he hates the sea captain. Still, let it go, Dad. He hasn't been on the show for months. Last I heard, his crew threw him overboard for hoarding limes.
It was Margarita Monday.
Anything else, Dad?
Sandberg texted and wanted me to tell you that Frisbee sucks.
Dude, she's here today.
My bad.
I told you to leave after the Streetcar Named a Liar joke, so if you're still here, that's on you. Quiet, Frisbee. Don't worry, she's not here. We pre-taped that. Anyway, the point is, even after a violent insurrection to overthrow the government, the GOP has essentially pledged its unwavering loyalty to Trump. And now he's set to make his first political speech since leaving office this week at CPAC, not to be confused with CPAP, which is what Melania wears at night, so Trump won't try to kiss her.
Yeah, it's really sad. It has something to do with her airways. It's a medical condition. What's it called, Mel? Mel? What's your sleep thing called? I want to say sleep Applejack, but that's definitely wrong. Mel? Is it sleep Applebee's? She's sleeping bad in the neighborhood. Did you hear that, Mel? I did a spin on the Applebee's. She probably can't hear me over the machine.
And in advance of the speech, Graham has been all over cable news, talking up Trump as the leader and the future of the party.
Trump's going to give a speech Sunday that's going to be very policy-centric. Every Republican should rally around it. I think it will help us with independence. And I've never felt better about President Trump's leading the party than I do right now.
First of all, you really expect us to believe his speech is going to be policy-centric? His speeches weren't even policy-centric when he was president. I bet I can predict what it'll be. He'll spend a half an hour whining about getting canceled, zing Cheney a few times. At some point, he'll say a curse word, and the crowd will go nuts like a bunch of fifth graders when the music teacher says the word pianist too fast. And then he'll mention the squad, and everybody will boo. The whole thing is basically Rocky Horror Picture Show for wingnuts. By the way, at the same time that he's openly cheerleading a former president who tried to overturn an election, incited a violent insurrection, and routinely called for his political enemies to be jailed, Graham is also calling President Biden's COVID relief package divisive, despite the fact that it is overwhelmingly popular in polls. Just yesterday, a poll found that 76% of voters, including 60% of Republicans, support the bill. You know how rare that kind of consensus is? You can't even get 76% of voters to agree to vote. And yet Graham had this to say about it.
All I can say is that this $1.9 trillion being jammed in a partisan fashion, doubling the minimum wage and a bunch of other stuff, is the furthest thing from unity I've seen.
Really? It's the furthest thing from unity you've seen? Was your vision obstructed from the Trump flag rioters hung at the Capitol? So Republicans have, for the most part, pledged complete and total loyalty to Trump as he prepares to reemerge for his first post-presidency speech. Not only that, Trump's lies about the election have essentially become canon on the right. Over the weekend, House GOP whip Steve Scalise refused to say that the election wasn't stolen. And earlier this week, the chairman of CPAC, Matt Schlapp of the law firm Schlemiel, Schlemazel, and Schlapp, essentially doubled down on the lie.
It's still very important that we go back to the idea of legal voting, and people should be legally registered to vote in order to vote. When voter fraud occurs, no matter who
commits it, you need to have proof, Matt. It should be fully prosecuted.
And
you have to have proof that it would have changed an outcome.
We have it.
You don't have it. Matt, why do you ignore
Chris, dozens of lawsuits failed on this? Let me.
Why ignore it?
You're right. They did fail, but guess what? You know this. You're a good lawyer. Just because you fail in court doesn't mean you don't have a good case. It means you lost in court.
Believe it or not, it can be both. You can lose in court and have a bad case, especially if you lose 60 times and your lawyer starts leaking from the head like he mixed up the shampoo and the motor oil. Crap! No wonder my car wouldn't start. Oh, Rudy, this is why your cousin left you. And yet, as crazy as these people are, there's no doubt that they are the core constituency of the modern Republican Party, a party that has become totally unmoored from reality, that relishes performative cruelty and traffics in racism, cultural grievances, and paranoia. Even the few non-psychotic Republicans left are willing to admit this. Utah Senator Mitt Romney said this week that if Trump runs in 2024, he'll probably win the nomination.
Will President Trump continue to play a role in my party? I'm sure he will. He has by far the largest voice and a big impact in my party. I don't know if he'll run in 2024 or not, but if he does, I'm pretty sure he will win the nomination.
You think he would win the nomination?
Oh, I think he'd win the nomination if he runs. The polls show that among the names being floated as potential contenders in 2024, if you put President Trump in there among Republicans, he wins in a landslide. And I would probably be getting behind somebody who I thought more represented the tiny wing of the Republican Party that I represent.
So leave the party. The distance between you and Joe Biden is nothing compared to the gulf between you and Donald Trump. You don't have to go down with a ship like that old couple that stayed in bed in Titanic. But he's right on both counts. Trump would probably win the nomination, and the wing of the party that Romney represents is tiny. There aren't many Romney stands left in the GOP. Even when he was the nominee in 2012, Republican voters backed him with all the enthusiasm of a teen who asked their parents for BTS tickets and got Kenny G instead. Oh, I'm sorry, I thought you'd love it, since, you know, you play the saxophone and marching band. I mean, look how close you are to the stage. No good deed, I guess. This is the modern GOP, a party fully detached from reality and from the mainstream of American politics. They're in lockstep behind an ex-president who fomented a violent insurrection and who oversaw a reign of misery and mass death. But they're calling a COVID relief bill that has 76% support from voters divisive. If he thinks that's divisive, can you imagine what he thinks about the return of the sea captain?
Oh my God, I hate it.
Okay. I know we're hard on you, Lindsay, but Jesus. This has been a closer look.
Do you ever feel like you're settling? For your foundation, that is. Maybelline's new Instant Age Rewind Eraser Foundation doesn't settle into fine lines and wrinkles. With SPF 20 and moisturizing Pro Vitamin B5, this foundation not only provides medium coverage and a natural finish, but also protects and nourishes your skin. And the best part? The blurring sponge tip applicator makes application a breeze. Say goodbye to cakey, uneven foundation, and hello to a flawless, radiant complexion. Try our new foundation today and see the difference for yourself at amazon.com/instant-eraser-foundation.
Our guest tonight is an Emmy-nominated actor and comedian you know from Saturday Night Live, as well as films such as Grown Ups, Joe Dirt, and Tommy Boy. Plus, The Wrong Missy, he co-hosts the Netflix After Party, which is currently streaming on Netflix. Please welcome back to the show our good friend David Spade. How are you, David?
I thought you were looking for me to walk out.
It's weird, right? That moment where you're supposed to walk out?
You're usually behind the curtain like this. Jump out. Yeah, it's definitely weird. It's definitely weird with, you don't have a crowd there. I don't have a crowd in my house.
It's weird times, and you were starting a new show, Netflix After Party, and I have to imagine one of the hardest parts of it is that you didn't get to establish the baseline of what it was like with people in the audience. Like, it's not easy for us, but at least we got to do it for a while with an audience before we did it without. How has it been?
We started with nothing, and then it was slowly just trickling in the office. We've had one or two guests come in. They passed away immediately after. they came in, which was cool. And then, we have people on Zoom and you do it. And sometimes we have people in Australia and, you know, it's like a hit show for Netflix. We go over one show each episode. And if it's, you know, Bridgerton, they're in London. And so you ask a question and it's like literally 22 minutes later and then they answer and you're like, next thing on, they're answering. but the pandemic, I was on another show, and when it stopped, we sort of went to this, you know? We went the other way. We phased down and out. And then that show got canceled during it, and I did an article, and I sort of cried about it. But the thing is, it's so dumb. Like, shows get canceled all the time. It was great. It would still be on. It's like, I don't even know what I'm talking about. So they canceled it, and but I stayed on. I did monologues and stuff, just waiting for, you know, just as an outlet to just for no reason, just because I was in my house and I like to write jokes and I had some writer from the show and I was like, let's write a few things. And that was fun. And because we couldn't do anything. And then after like months, the governor comes out, hey, the first tier, things are going to open up. We're like, here we go. First tier, we're going to open some rock quarries, archery repair shops, caterpillar sanctuaries. I'm like, I'm sorry, what's going on? Anything I do? No, that's going to be a while. So I was glad about that.
You started doing what you called the nonologue on Instagram. And was it nice? Because again, you've obviously worked, for cable channels, for network channels, where you have a censor who is telling you if you ever cross the line. When you're doing an Instagram video, no one's there. Do you ever remember some of the times that you received heat, be it at SNL or elsewhere?
Oh, yeah. Well, one time at SNL, and what you're saying is true. When I do a nonologue at home, there's no rules. I don't work for anyone. It doesn't matter. No one's like, you know, we kind of work with that person. No, we actually, they're one of our sponsors, which understandably is in every business. But when it's just yourself, I don't give a f-. So I do it. And one time on SNL, a couple people remember. No. So I did an in and out list. So one of my first ones was with Dennis Miller. So he was at Update. This is right up your alley. Update. Dennis Miller, I was next to him, my little bit. And I was like, what's in, you know, going to bars, what's out, not going to bar, you know, that kind of stuff. It was sort of middling. But one of them, I said, what's in? Not enunciating, so the censors can't catch you. What's out? Going out of the show and getting some And that, as you know, at SNL, so Andrew, I think was his name, was a redhead.
Andrew Brewer? Yeah, Brewer.
He was very cool. And he goes, Spade, come on. Like, he was always like, come on, man. You're just making my job tough. And I go, I'm not going to really say it. And he goes, we will lose so much advertising if you say it. We saw it at rehearsal. So when you go to air, if you say it, this loses $20 million of advertising. If you say these three letters, if you say these two letters. And I'm like, And Dennis Miller goes, you're going to blow it, Spudley. And so I said it, and it got too big a laugh, and I was like, "Nah!" And then Dennis goes, they go, "That's the news." And he goes, "You're done, dude." And so I walked out, and then I see Brewer, and he goes, and I go, "I don't know, just see what happens." And then I think it was okay.
You got
something happened. I just saw this. I just realized you were there on the other one.
Yeah, I was there. I want to point out, I co-wrote this sketch, Sean Penn's Celebrity Roast. I was Sean Penn, and you played Owen Wilson. But I did not. This was your idea, was what you wanted Owen Wilson's nose to look like, who is someone that you and I are both huge fans of.
Love Owen Wilson and love Sean Penn. Did you do a Sean Penn nose, or is that you?
I think that's just my nose, yeah. We famously have the same nose.
So I do Owen Wilson. Yeah, we had it look like a wiener, you know, like that was sort of the funny bit. And then I think you as the writer heard it, because I heard about it, so you heard about it, that it was probably Brewer going, come on, you guys can't make it look like exactly a wiener. And so prosthetic-wise, so after dress, something happened where that note got lost in the shuffle, which sometimes happened in the chaos. And so I'm going out to the bit. I'm like, oh, we never changed it. And so I might have been telling you because you were right there and you were the boss of the sketch. So we just did it. And I don't. And then it was like on the internet because they go, well, yeah. How can they do this? That was funny, though.
I definitely think like the prosthetic guys were so happy when you gave them the initial note of like, I want it to look like this. And they really went for it. And
they did. Got everyone in trouble. I thought it was just prosthetics just are off on their own. And then if you give them a note, they're like excited. Like, watch how perfect we can do this.
I saw that you just bought at auction Chris Farley's old Harley Davidson. Did people know that you were the person who was bidding on it?
No, you know, a guy came to me and he said, I on my DMs, he says, which I answer sadly. And he said, I have Chris Farley's old Viper, which I remember. And I was like, that old black Viper? Yeah, and he got a ticket in, I remember. And he said, yeah, and he showed me a picture of the thing in the Inquirer where he got a ticket in. I was like, yeah, he goes, do you want to buy it? And I was like, I kind of would like to have something from Chris, you know, just be interesting to have, I don't know. And I love cars. So he stalled or something. And then his brother goes, his motorcycle's for sale, his Harley from Chicago. And it's on an auction. You should get on it tomorrow. And I was like, oh, that would be cool. I put it in my house. My house is a mansion. So I said, see all the hardwood floor? Like, I could just park it. I'll buy that little plant. So, or put it in the tree. So it's basically the Cecil Hotel here. So anyway, I go on this auction. And I'm getting outbid. And so it gets up. And I finally win it. And then his brother goes, I can't believe you beat Timmy Meadows. And I go, that's what I was going up against? Like, you should have told me. We could have figured it out. We don't have to get it up. So anyway, I go, oh, don't tell Tim I got it. He'll feel bad. So a minute later, Tim calls me. Hey, he just told me it was you. So I go, and he goes, would you sell it to me? Can I get it from you? And I was like, he goes, you know, I grew up in Chicago with him. I love motorcycles. And I go, yeah, okay. Because, you know, he didn't have anything from Chris's, and I thought, you know, he's a Chicago guy, and it was from Chicago the most. So I gave it to Timmy, and he sent me some of the money, so it was great.
Just some?
No, he didn't. He sent me all of it, but then my guy says, I go, Timmy's going to send the money, and then they said, oh, and then later they go, you know, it's way more than that, because the auction fees and all the tag, and I go, yeah. And they go, tell Tim. I go, I'm not telling Tim. Like, I call him, hey, Tim, a couple grand, but if you could, I can meet you on La Siena. I would hate for him to see this and send me money. This would be horrible. Worst case scenario.
I'm glad. That's very kind of you. That's a really nice outcome. And congrats on the show. It's really fun to see you being able to tell jokes on TV again. Thanks so much for being here, Dave.
Love it, Seth. Miss you. I haven't seen you in a while. And take care and keep doing a good show, buddy.
All right. Be well. The Netflix After Party is streaming now.
Late Night with Seth Meyers airs weeknights on NBC at 12:35, 11:35 Central. Original music on the Late Night podcast is by the HE Band.
Don't forget to follow the handle Late Night Seth on social media and tell your friends to subscribe to the Late Night Podcast wherever they get their podcasts.
Welcome to the small town of Chinook, where faith runs deep and secrets run deeper. In this new thriller, available exclusively on Wondery Plus, religion and crime collide when a gruesome murder rocks the isolated Montana community. Everyone is quick to point their fingers at a drug-addicted teenager, but local deputy Ruth Vogel isn't convinced. She suspects connections to a powerful religious group. Enter federal agent V.B. Loro, who has been investigating a local church for possible criminal activity. The pair form an unlikely partnership to catch the killer, unearthing secrets that leave Ruth torn between her duty to the law, her religious convictions, and her very own family. But something more sinister than murder is afoot, and someone is watching Ruth. With an all-star cast led by Emmy nominee Sanaa Lathan and Star Wars Kelly Marie Tran, Chinook is available exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.